Has your hair ever grown so long that whenever you move your head, you have to do some extra moves in order to be able to see whatever you want to look at? Has it ever grown so long that when you want to look at something, you have to kind of quickly look beyond it, let your hair settle, and then you can look back and look at it? I currently have a hair that feels really long for me. Maybe if it goes to another length beyond this, I'll be able to see everything without extra moves of my head. But I wonder if my neck is becoming overly strong due to all this hair shaking, and that my neck is acting like a kind of comb beret system to keep my hair in place while I go and try to look around. I've noticed that I can't really look down. I just look up. I think it's helping cell phone neck. Maybe a long haircut is the solution to cell phone neck. Text neck, whatever they call it, whatever we call it. We are controlling the language now because we are on the radio. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. The medium is the message. This is Fun with Fritz, and I just found a piece of floss on the floor. I'm on the floor next to some ducts.
These ducts are used in insulation or air conditioning.
It is the dog days of summer, and the air conditioning units are being put away, some of them. And some of them are being left out, the smaller ones. We are resuming an adventure. If you're just joining us today, that's all right. It's an adventure life wherever you begin. You meet someone, and it's not the beginning of their story, but it is the beginning for the two of you of your story together. And that is how I look at this story. Now, in this story, there seem to be four persistent characters. And they're extremely persistent, though maybe not effective. Florsheim de Bogglebeard. Florsheim, thanks for joining us today. It's all right. I'm happy to be here. My character's knocked out. He's unconscious. He threw a hammer at a bat. It flew through the roof, and then it came and was snatched out of the air by a lizard-like man on the roof. And he took the hammer and he threw it back down at me. It hit me in the head, denting my helmet, and I fell unconscious to the floor. I am a truly Florsheim right now. I'm just a shiny spot on the floor. And it's unfortunate, you are a shiny spot on the floor, but you have companions. You have three other companions. There are four in the group altogether. You know, one of them may be able to help you.
I love to help Florsheim. I mean, he's a good friend, but I feel like he always eats so much of the food, the group food, that, you know, before I bandage his wounds, I'm just going to go and check and see if he's got stolen away any extra food. I'm just going to roll.
And in fact, you find that he's taken an entire extra week of rations that you guys never knew about, you were never privy to.
You know, I suspected as much. So I'll just take those rations, put them aside, and then I'll try to fix him up and heal him.
You're losing valuable time, and the time that it takes you to get the rations off his body, he might get that much closer to death. He's already unconscious, and he's slowly fading.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's just important to me, bread and cheese, and I'm pretty hungry. I haven't eaten in a while.
And meanwhile, around you, there's a giant bat that's flapping all around, and Foghorn Pete has just gone up through the ceiling, and he's gonna fly down through another hole in the ceiling, and then there's another into another room, an adjacent room where your other, one of your other companions has charged off chasing after the woman that you had kidnapped from the inn, who worked there at the tavern. You kidnapped her when you accidentally put her to sleep, and then you decided you didn't want to leave her there because maybe you never knew whose other hands she would fall into, so you wanted to take her to keep her safe. But then in your efforts to keep her safe, you put her into a hole with some skeletons to hide her from other monsters who were attacking you. Unfortunately, she woke up in the hole with the skeletons and was so disturbed that she was about to shriek, but then rather than let her warn the monsters of your whereabouts, you decided to put your hand over her mouth and then keep her from shrieking. So in her experience, she's just been kidnapped and then held in a pit against her will. So as soon as she got a chance to get away from you, she ran out of that pit, and then she ran, well, towards more danger, but towards the closest structure to hide in, which was this giant castle. And she ran in the castle, into the castle, and she was followed by these dog-faced men. There's a lot going on, but that's roughly what's happening. I guess I failed to mention that there's also the other party that's shadowing you guys. So, Mirror Man, yeah, that's right. There is so much going on, but, you know, I'm quite intelligent. I'm really capable of taking it all in, you know. I've got just about as high as an intelligence you can have. And, you know, I'm charismatic. I'm a fairly hardy person. I'm just average strength, you know. And I'm somewhat wise, just average, you know. But I'm so excellent in these other ways that I feel like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to try to bandage this guy up. Oh, wow, I just rolled, yeah, and you did, you rolled this about as good as you can, yeah, he's like completely bandaged, he jumps back up, he's like amazing, he just like, actually gives him an extra bonus to like fly, he just like flies up through the ceiling. Well, you managed to stop the blood, he's got a giant bruise in his head, and you leak the bruise, you let the blood out, actually, and that relieves pressure against his brain, and it allows him to come back to consciousness. And you do revive him with your roll of a 20. You revive him. He's got 1 point left before he falls back. You know, so the slightest hit, and he'll be back unconscious again, but you do get him up. He does not fly through the ceiling, you know, but he feels better. Yeah, dwarf. I'm a dwarf. I'm better. I feel, you know, I'm a hardy creature, man as well, though short, but for my people, that's how high we are. It's like Napoleon in his time. This is the height of a man. You don't scoff at this man at this height. This is the height he is. Of all the men, we are this height. Perhaps we grow hair to make up for the fact that there are so many other people towering over us, but we're confident nonetheless and excited, and you know, it may be that I'm extremely average in almost every way in terms of my statistics, but I have one thing where I slightly excel, and that is in my hardiness, and I step up, I pull a hammer out of my helmet where it dented me, my own hammer. I was hit by my own hammer. I look at my hammer and I say, Dwarven hammer, lead me to my brother. I'd like to find him. I know that this castle holds the secret to his whereabouts. Lead me to him. Meanwhile, up above, the bat is flapping, and it looks like the bat is coming and getting ready to come down and flap and bite you guys up again. So it does. It flies down and it swoops over, and Mirror Man, since you're the one over the dwarf, you know, you're the target. Oh no, you're coming for me. I like animals. I'm going to try to speak to this animal.
I know some languages. I'm not skilled in the woodland arts, but perhaps, you know, I'm greatly intelligent. Perhaps I know a language that he speaks. Whoa. I do. I rolled another 20. That's two in a row. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, just as good as I could do. I speak the language of the bat. I tell him I'm his friend, his mother. I say, look at my hair. Look at your own hair. They are so similar. Beautiful hair. And you are a bat with wiry eyelashes and black, beautiful hair. And then, if you look at my chest hair, you will see that it is silky, soft, and smooth, and that I have braided it. And then, if you look at my leg hair, you will see that it is spiky and stiff. And if you look at yourself and your own chest hair and your own leg hair, you will see that it is correspondingly accoutred. And as I'm doing this, I have to rip open my robe to show him. Talk, robe, talk. To show. I have to rip open my robe to show him what I have inside. You know, for a moment there, I was really coming under the influence of you, Florsheim de Boggbeard. Yeah, you were letting me dictate your character. Sorry, you were in the bathroom, and I just started going. Yeah, I'd appreciate it, Florsheim, the player for Florsheim de Boggbeard. I'd appreciate it if you let me run my character, and you run your character. So, you know, Mirrorman Cloudhair, he wears wigs. He doesn't have any actual his own hair. So, he has all kinds of wigs. So, I think I can go ahead with what you're saying, but you got to keep in mind that he's just wearing wigs, and the wigs can be made out of the hair from a variety of other animals that he's encountered before. It might just so happen that he's wearing a wig of the bat, and the bat is wigging onto his wig, and I'm not going to rip off my clothes, but I will furl my cloak out, as you suggested. That sounds good. Like, I've imagined that a bat speaks through, like a bumblebee, like by moving its body in a crazy dance, and I'll do that.
Well, this bat, you know, like other bats, it speaks through sound, but a very high-pitched sound that you can't hear. But as you dance around, it has the effect. Well, you know, I'm so intelligent. I must know that. I'm sure I do. I mean, I'm so successful in this maneuver that I move around, but I'm actually moving with some steel. I have my steel-toed boots, creating a ringing sound moving against the floor. And it's creating just the right resonance to let the bat know that it needs to just go outside, to leave this room right now. This is now a room that is dangerous for the bat. It needs to fly outside and land on the roof and make sure there's no one up on the roof. I mean, if that's too complicated, I'm just saying outside, and then number two, on the roof, and then number three, destroy the guys on the roof. You know, danger on the roof. That's number three. That's like, it's like a three-part sentence, and hopefully, you know, don't understands all the parts of the sentence, but maybe it just understands, like, subject, object, and not the verb, you know.
Well, the bat flies out. It, the combination of your movement and the strange noises that you create does cause it to leave. It flees the room. It flies out, but not before grabbing Florsheim de Bogglebeard. Yep, grabbing him up in its claws and lifting him up into the sky. It's able to carry you for a little while, about 70 feet up into the sky, and then it gives you this great panoramic view, Florsheim, of what's happening, and you see Foghorn Pete, little Foghorn Pete, climbing up through the rafters and appearing on what would be the roof of this castle, or of the room that you're in.
But since the castle was formerly, you know, two stories and one of the stories has collapsed, or maybe even more of them, but you can now see into that area and you see that there are these two lizard men there, and one of them has a crossbow. And Foghorn Pete,
that's me, Foghorn Pete, world swimmer. Yes, I'm going to foil them all, and I have a rope, and I'm going to dive through the hole, and I'm going to save Esmeralda.
Yes, and so he's in the middle of doing that. When you fly up and you look down, you see there's two holes in the roof, two large holes that you can make out. One looks back down. You can see Mirrorman Cloudhair down there looking up at you, and he gives you a little wave.
I put my hand over my mouth. Oh, I'm so shocked, and I'm so sorry. Ooh. I was talking to the bat, but ooh. And I kind of motioned to the bat, like, come down, come down.
Right. So you're motioning to the bat. And then through the hole the other hole in the ceiling, it looks down on another room. And in that room, you see Esmeralda, the woman that you had kidnapped from the tavern. And she's being held in the corner, captive, it seems. Or she's sitting on a chest, anyway. The chest has two compartments, and one of them is open. It's got a drawer and then a big lid. And the drawer is open, and the inside is gold. And she's sitting on it with a kind of, like, resigned expression on her face. And she's wearing a bluish dress with white, big white petticoats. I think that's the layers under the dress. And then and a kind of a nice furl at the top, and maybe the sort of a leather apron over all of this. And maybe some leather kind of arm bands, trying to keep the wrists from getting scuffed up in her line of work. Maybe she feeds some animals through a cage. Or maybe she was, in a past life, before she put on the apron, a fighter, a hero. And when she put on the apron of feeble-mindedness, she became basically the slave of the tavern owner and turned into the docile person that you see today. If only you could take off the robe, who knows, you know, what kind of person would emerge from underneath. You look down and you're up in the sky, and there you are in the bat. Now, if you fall, you'll die, almost certainly, because you're up pretty high, and you're also, you know, you've just been revived from a grievous wound, but you're still just barely alive.
I'm a dwarf, and do I see a mountain or another place I can signal my people, the other dwarves, that can come and they can find me and help me in this predicament? We dwarves are not born in the sky. We are creatures who live in the stone and the earth. We like to chew gravel instead of brushing our teeth to clean off the extra meat and the rind. And we spit out the earth. I know the composition of a soil down to the 0.1% just by tasting it with my finger. Just if I just smell some rock or some ground, I can tell its consistency within 10% accuracy. If I just look at some stone or rock, I'm accurate to within, let's say, 25%. And if I just hear somebody talking about their day, what they did in their day, with no mention of stone, I could probably name the various types of stone that they encountered with at least a 50% accuracy. If I was asleep and somebody else in another place was asleep on stone, I could say within 90% accuracy what that was. Now, take my percentages and flip them upside down is how I meant it. You know, 90% maybe I would be wrong, but 10% I would be right in that last case. If I'm asleep and they're asleep, you know, in different places, I could guess the stone 1 out of 10 times. But, you know, if I taste it, I'm pretty much going to know what it is. That's what I'm thinking about as I'm up there with the bat. I'm just thinking, how can I turn this bat into stone? I try to make myself very heavy. I'm thinking heavy thoughts. And maybe I reach up and I'm going to squeeze the bat, squeeze out some of the air and the stomach. Just a gentle squeeze. I don't want him to drop me, like a caress, almost like a bowel motion. And I'm going to roll. Yeah, you succeed. You succeed in squeezing the bat in a place that causes it to react. Now let's see which way it goes. Highs, it goes up. Lows, it goes down.
it flies up, further up, unfortunately, and it's starting to lose its grip on you. It can't really... I reverse. You know, if I squeeze and it goes up, I reverse and it must go down. You let go, and it still flutteringly tries to go up. Oh no, this is really serious. I shout down, Mirror Man, Cloudhair, I need you. I'm going to fall. I need to land on something soft. And I check and I look. The moat, there must be, it's a castle, must have a moat. Well, it's a ruin, a castle ruin. It was built in the side of a cliff. There's no provision for a moat. I think that there is a stream, though, however, nearby. There's like a stream, and we can see how high it is. Well, it's 12 feet deep right now, so that's pretty great. 12 out of 12 feet. That's, you lucked out there. So there's a full stream because it's been raining, and maybe there's a pool of 3 feet. Yeah, there's a pool about 3 feet deep that's fairly close to you. If you were to drop from here, you could aim for the 3 foot deep pool. And unfortunately, that wouldn't help you. But and in terms of the river, oh, it's only 10 feet away from the farthest place where you could get to at your moment right now. So you'd have to direct the bat towards the river a little bit. But while you're doing these hijinks, downstairs in the other room, our British friend, Maximilian Overdrive, the Claymore on the Moor, he's charging after Esmeralda, trying to capture her or free her, depending on your perspective, from the other group of adventurers whom you had met before in the inn, who were in the other room holding Esmeralda. And so, Maximilian Overdrive, and yeah, I'm like running in there, and I'm like, yeah, like feeling ferocious, you know, like crazily mighty. I've got my claymore, and I'm wearing my chainmail shirt and no pants, but I've got like a rabbit, a couple of rabbits, a brace of rabbits around like a belt on my waist. So it was fairly modest, but also terrifying. Can you imagine the aspect? I'm running and I've got a mirror. This is what I do right before I run in. I fasten a mirror on my chest. And so when a person looks at me, it's like, wait a minute. What am I looking at? Am I looking at myself? Am I fighting myself? Am I fighting you? It's like, they're not going to know, are they? Because I've got a giant mirror on my chest. You're not going to know if you're fighting yourself. You're going to think you're fighting your own self, and you're going to hesitate. And it's in that split moment, the hesitation, it's like, wham! I'm just going to come down and rule the room and just rock it down to the bone in it. I'll take it. And I'll say, Esmeralda, come to me. And she's going to see herself. And she's going to look. And she's going to be like, oh, I've got to do my hair. I'm going to comb my hair. And then while she's combing her hair, I'm going to be like, yeah, I've got a comb. Because I always bring extra. I've got a hair comb. And I'll just wait. Let her do it patiently. I'm going to go, oh, here's some oil for your hair. You know, I just got my oil that I use to burn things, but it's also good for hair. Here's some lantern oil for your hair. And she'd use that. And then, yeah, I got a spoon. And I got, oh, you know what? I got the tray that she used to carry her drinks. I brought it with me. I got a tray. And I'll show her that. I'll be like, look, I'm from, you know, I understand you. I'm from where you're from, what you know about. So Maximilian, you charge in there. Okay, and you have the mirror fastened, and you swing your crazy claymore. Are you trying to hurt anyone or just kind of bash them to the sides, like with the flat side of the sword type of thing?
Yeah, that's an idea. Okay, I do that. Yeah, I bash them on the sides.
All right. Well, I mean, I want you to do what you wanted to do. I don't want to dictate what you're doing. I just wasn't sure from your description if you wanted them to die or you want to rule over them, so I figured you'd want to subdue them.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I'll rule over them. Yeah, I'll just subdue them. Yeah, like they're dead. Yeah.
Oh, so you are?
No, not dead, not yet. No, that's not fun. No, I'll run in there and I'll bash them, boom, and
Yeah, and you did. You rolled well. As you run in, there's a guy hiding behind the door, and he's Zal, the symbolic cleric. But you don't see him. You see in front the other Patricio. That's right. Patricio Orange. It's with the copper dragon skin skull cap. That's her. And you bash her with the flat side of your claymore. Wham! Two-handed. Throw a big damage. I got a 4 out of 10. Plus 1, because strength is like a 5. Boom! And she's first level wizard. I think you probably knocked her out. Yes, with your sword, and you just knock her flat onto her feet, off of her feet. Esmeralda looks up at you, and I give a winning smile for a winning woman. I say, here you are, Esmeralda, a winning smile for a winning woman, and I give her my big winning smile, and I hope that she looks in to the mirror. Well, okay, so this is your first time interacting with her. She looks at you, and then she looks at the mirror, and she's intrigued to see her own reflection in the mirror. Now, the apron that she's wearing has turned her intelligence artificially down to a 4 out of 18. You know, 4 is just about as low as it can go. So she's just fascinated, and she has that experience that some like animals have when they're wondering, who is that looks like me in the mirror? Now, well, let's just check to see. Oh, wow. Another 20. That's amazing. She looks at you, and in a moment of lucidity, she says to you, you're the one who kidnapped me, and now you've come to save me. Not so likely. Aw, I can't believe it. And while you're staring at each other, because her gaze just arrests you in this, like, sudden intelligence in her eyes. It's as if she's broken through the spell for a moment. Like, she saw her reflection, and she saw... For a moment, she was, like, confused by her reflection, and then she saw the stupid look on her face, and she realized, oh, I'm under some kind of enchantment, and then she just broke it, and she saw you. And while she's looking at you, you kept her eyes, like, flicker to the side slightly, and that's the only warning you have of this guy coming up behind you, Zal. He swings his mace at you, boom, and he hits you in the back of the head, clang. This is not looking good, Maximilian. Oh! But it's a glancing blow. It's a glancing blow, and it bangs off of the back of your chainmail hood, which you've pulled up over your head. I pull it over my head in order to give myself a kind of better appearance, like, so I look more presentable and kind of exciting. And also, I've got a bit of losing the hair in the very front prematurely, but I've got an extra lot in the back. And so I pull up the hood, it sort of covers it up, and then poof out at the sides around my kind of like a cravat around my neck, right? Like a fluffy, hairy cravat around my neck to give of braids of my remaining kind of like dreaded, dirty, like slightly dirty hair, just right in there though, like a special load of snakes right under my skin. For anyone who's coming in, like, give me a little kiss, to get tickled by these little snakes of hair that I've got, like, snicking out there, each one having its own different color braiding woven in. Golden snake, yellow snake, copper snake, metallic snake, oil-coloured snake, brick-coloured snake, a bit of a wood-coloured snake, grass-coloured snake, all of these snakes. Well, no one's coming to kiss you at the moment, Maximilian. So you have your sword, you knocked out their magic user, but their cleric, Zal, hit you over the back of the head, and then you turn to face him. I'm going to scoop up
Esmeralda and kick him down and charge out. Back out the front door. Just right out. Just like that. I don't care about treasure. Nah. I don't care about it. This is developing. Florsheim is up in the air. He's herded around by the beast, by the bat. Florsheim, your latest attempts to control the bat fail miserably. However, oh my gosh, Mirror Man and Cloud Hair. Oh, my. I would like to save Florsheim, but I see what's developing in the other room. It seems more pressing. And I still have my paralysis gland dagger. And I notice, you know, my friend just got walked up on from behind. So I'm going to now walk up on them from behind. And this cleric who's, you know, just hit my friend in the back with a mace. Well, I'm just going to slide this dagger gently across the back of his neck. Drawing kind of like a thin line there. Just enough, pricking the surface just enough to get the poison into his system, instantly paralyzing him in place. I amazingly rolled a 20 again for you, which is your third 20 in a row. I have never seen that before. So, you know, Mirror Man, it's as if fortune and fate have met and married one another and are both smiling on you and have thrown the nuptial bouquet and you've caught it, because everything that you try just works amazingly. And you step around the rubble in this decaying castle. The only thing that gives you away is a foot scrape. And sure enough, Esmeralda notices it, and as her eyes flicked off of Maximilian for a moment, Maximilian with the claymore, after they flick off of him and then they go to the cleric, they suddenly flick off of you, the cleric, and they go to you. But it's too late for the cleric. And as he's turning to smite you, he freezes up solid in the midst of uttering a spell. He was going to utter some kind of his last spell for the day. He was going to utter it. And he actually has a spell which will do the same thing that this poison, this paralysis poison does. It will hold you in place. And he was going to counter your poison with his own spell poison, but you were able to stop him before he could do it. Well, Esmeralda then sees this various turn of events, and one person after another, and she reaches into the treasure chest and she grabs an object and she runs up a stairwell, which is unexpected because this is mostly a first floor. You know, most of the second floor has fallen away. But it could be that this stairwell leads to a tower, or it could be that it leads to a dead end. And let's see which. Highs, it's a tower. Lows, it's a dead end. And it's six. So, it's a tower. It leads to a tower. You can see that, Florsheim. You, who are up in the air, let's see how many feet. You are 100 feet now above the castle. And you see this this woman, Esmeralda, and you see her run up. And she has some kind of a scepter in her hand. And she's running up the stairwell up into this tower, and you see for a moment, because part of the wall of the tower has fallen away, you see her like up the stairwell, and then you see her pass by a window as she enters part of the tower that's more fully formed. And let's see how tall the tower is. Let's see, up to four stories, let's say, and more than one at least. So if we roll one, it's two stories, and so on. Oh, it is a five-story tower. So amazingly, this tower is five stories. Now, each level of this place was about 18 feet. So you are probably about 10 feet above this tower, actually. Wow. Wow. What an opportunity here presents itself. I, Florsheim de Bogglebeard, I can save the day, though I'm being carried by a bat in the air in fear of my life. I can land on top of the tower, maybe even
dive through a window. Should I throw my life to the wind and risk all on the roll of die? Roll a die or die to see if I can dive through? Everybody's been rolling so well. I imagine I could probably do it. I'm excited. I'm gonna dive. I'm just gonna do it. Oh gosh. But if I feel that I'm going miss at the last moment, I'll grab the bat with a rope. I'll use my rope, a grapple and a rope, and I'll grapple in a rope as I'm falling down to my demise. So he rolled an 8. And this is kind of a tricky maneuver. Yeah, so you're falling, unfortunately. You just miss the tower. But you are free of the bat. And you're falling. However, Foghorn Pete has been diving with a rope attached to him from the roof down into the room where Esmeralda was.
Oh, I'm Foghorn Pete, world swimmer. I may be small, but I'm spunky, and I'm not going to give up so easily. I mean, sure, one roll of the dice and I fail, but hey, I don't see it that way. It's an opportunity to save my friend who's flying through the air, my dwarf friend, and I'm going to make a lasso, and I'm going to lasso him out of the air. And that's right, instead of ending up in that room, I'm going to boomerang back up onto the roof, and I'm going to use the lizard man's crossbow, and I'm going to tie a rope to it, and I'm going to fire the crossbow at the dwarf, and he's going to grab it out of the air, lasso. As the dwarf is falling, he'll grab onto the rope line, and that's what I'm going to do. Oh, I rolled a 6. So, well,
you scramble up to do this amazing, complicated maneuver, and you succeed in arriving in front of the lizard men. And then you notice that one of them has run off already toward the tower. They have a ladder that goes up that way, up to the tower. So one of them is running off towards that ladder. And the other one, you arrive at his feet, and he looks down and he sees you. And he's indeed the one with the crossbow. And he was already aiming at the dwarf. But he was aiming at the dwarf in order to shoot the dwarf, you know, dead out of the sky. But then he sees you. So you're able, at least, even in your failure, to distract him and to save your friend's life, at least for the moment, you know, as he falls to his death. Meanwhile, the bat, you know, the bat is still there. Now, I wonder if the bat takes an interest. The bat swoops down. So Mirror Man had not communicated again with the bat. So the bat doesn't attack the people on the roof, but the bat does swoop down and kind of come into the mix. So there's a chance that if the dwarf is extremely lucky or pulls some kind of maneuver, he could try to remount the bat, because the bat is currently flying towards back to the room where it lived, to where it goes, which is below where the dwarf is. And you could lasso the bat or some how, you know, there's still a chance that he won't just land and splatter. And let's see how many feet he's fallen. If I roll the full 100, then that's bad and he's dead. Okay, so he's only fallen 60 feet. So that's 40 feet to go. So you're at about, Florsheim, at the beginning of your next move, you're about 40 feet above the ground, and you're still falling, flailing. Meanwhile, Foghorn Pete, you are kicked by the lizardman. He tries to kick you off the roof, and he does kick you. Kicks you really hard.
I grab onto his leg. I'm not going to let him kick me off this roof. I grab onto his leg.
Okay, well, he does 3 damage to you. You've got 1 point left.
That's okay. Now that I've got his leg and he's still holding the crossbow. I know he's holding the crossbow. I'm going to try to get him to fire the crossbow at the bat, killing the bat. The bat lands and the dwarf lands on top of the bat. That's the new plan. And I rolled an 11, which is not that good. So
you are able to get him to misfire. You're able to hit, you know, you grab onto his leg successfully, and then you're able to, like, punch up with your hand and you bonk the crossbow under his chin. He's got this metal encased covering on his chin, and it clangs off there, and then The shot goes wild, and let's see if the shot hits anything or anyone. Okay, the shot does hit someone. Five. Unfortunately, the crossbow bolt comes down, and it hits... Okay, it hits Mirror Man Cloud here. Oh, your luck had to end sometime, Mirror Man. And you're hit with a stray bolt of a crossbow. Fortunately, though, it's a glancing blow, and it just wings you. And you're as yet uninjured, so... Or relatively uninjured. This is the first time I'm... So you're still doing all right. It ricochets and it comes down from above, and you can see the lizard man above, and you see Foghorn Pete struggling with him. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. A dwarf is falling through the air. He's 40 feet away from total doom and destruction. It's right, it's true, but in my last move, I'm going to quickly scan and see what I've got here. I've got holy symbols, a warhammer, a shield. I'm going to try to ride down the side of the castle on my shield. I understand, you know, sloping constructions and corridors and this kind of stuff, and I'm going to try to do it. I'm going to try to grab on to, you know, any purchase that I can, swing myself. Oh, I know. I use the shield as a kind of a crazy sail. Like, you know, like those guys who jump out of the airplanes and they can sail down on the... Well, you know, that's a little anachronistic. I mean, your character might not have a concept of, like, jumping out of airplanes. This is like a medieval-style setting, you know. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know how it is. You see it all the time, people who ride on dragons, right? And then they jump out of, off the dragon, out of the wing area, you know, and they're using a board, of some kind, but in fact, why don't you just use your shield? So I'm gonna flip my shield around, and an amazing, hopefully amazing, wonderful maneuver, I'm gonna ride the shield, and it's gonna take me there. Oh my goodness. Oh man. Well, what? A one. That's my doom. I've rolled my doom. That is your doom, I think. It's a great idea. You take out the shield and you try to stand on it, and unfortunately, the shield just flies out of your grasp, and you're now going head down towards the ground, and you lost your shield, and in fact, the shield blocks the bat who was about to come and sweep you up. The shield, because it was going after you as some prey, the shield blocks the bat. On the positive side, you're not attacked by a bat, but you're about to fall the final 40 feet, and you'll almost certainly die from that fall. Now, I think you would die from that fall. The only chance you would have is to be raised from the dead by a powerful, magical person, and, you know, you're just starting out, so I don't think they'd bother. I'm not going to be deterred. Friends, come to my aid. Foghorn Pete, help. Anything, please. Shoot your arrow at me or something. Throw me a lasso.
I'm going to throw a lasso. I try to lasso him. And 15, that's pretty good. Maybe I lasso his leg.
All right, Foghorn Pete. You lasso his leg. You do. You lasso his leg. Now comes the hard part. You're going to have to... you know, make a strength check to see if you can hang on to him, if you're going to be able to hold on to him as he, you know, because he's going fast and he's a heavy dwarf. And
I'm just going to wrap the rope around the lizard man, yeah, really quickly. You know, I'm quick, I'm dexterous, and I'm going to wrap the rope around the lizard man.
Okay, and you wrap the rope around the lizard man, and it starts dragging. So when you get to the end of the rope, Florsheim, you swing, and you bang into the side of the castle, and you make a saving throw. See if you make it. You do. Not bad. 14. So you bash into the side there, into the side of the wall. And then the lizard man goes, he tries to hold on to the edge of the castle. And he holds on to the very edge. So right, you know, 10 feet before you fell to the ground, You are lassoed by Foghorn Pete, tied to the Lizard Man, and you slam into the wall there, and you dangle, having made one successful roll here lately. And Foghorn Pete, it's amazing. You've effectively incapacitated the Lizard Man, and you've helped your friend. Now, meanwhile, up in the tower, Esmeralda runs up to the top of the tower, and she has this crazy scepter. And she gets to the top of the tower. She opens a hatch. Now, waiting for her there is the Lizard Man, and they've been trying to get this scepter. This is their scepter, and they use this scepter to, like, call and control some foul beast. And he's so excited because there's a curse on the scepter that they can't touch it because they need it so badly, you know? So that, of course, they're not allowed to touch it, but she's touching it. And so he's trying to get her to come with him and to say the incantation to call the beast. And he seems to be persuading her. So far, he's been the nicest person to her, and he puts out his arm and she takes his arm, and they're about to, go back down the ladder when Maximilian, I'm charging up the stairs, isn't it? And maybe following behind me is Mirrorman, and we're charging up, and I see that he's going for the ladder, and I like kick it away so there's no escape. And you go to kick the ladder away, and you miss the ladder, and the Lizard Man grabs you, and he tries to flip you off. Ooh, and he does. He flips you off. I grab ladder as I'm flipping, and you miss the ladder as you're flipping. So now you're falling to your death. 50 feet for you. It's the top of the tower. Yeah, it's 100 feet. So it's, or maybe 80. Anyway, now you're falling down. But Mirrorman Cloudhair pops up. Right then. And I'll throw a lasso. That's the way to do it, isn't it? Okay, and then you throw a lasso, seeing these others having a lasso, and you all do have 50 feet of rope. So you... if I have enough time, I have a collapsible 10-foot pole, and I'd much rather just run to the edge and use my pole. Okay, you run to the edge, you slide your pole. Meanwhile, the other two are climbing down the ladder. You slide your pole out. Successfully, let's see, 17. You grab his pole, Maximilian. Yeah, I'll grab it, and I'm gonna swing, and I'm gonna like kick him off the ladder. Nonetheless, bam, and you finally connect, and you kick the ladder over to the side. Now, the side effect of this, let's see if they can keep the ladder. Oh wow! All right, Esmeralda nimbly leaps to the side, and she clutches onto the outside of the of the castle, but the ladder goes caterwauling down, and the Lizard Man goes falling down with it. Now, when she grabs on to the side, she would most likely drop the scepter in order to hold on, but she rolled a 20, another 20, so many today, and so she's able to, that's the highest roll, she's able to hold on to the scepter as well. So at the end of the moment, she's clinging to the side of the wall. The Lizard Man who's helping her is fallen down to his death. Or, let's see. He falls. He's all right. Oh, no, he's not all right. No, that hurts. Yeah, he falls down and he goes unconscious. The other Lizard Man is holding on for dear life. Florsheim de Bogglebeard, you got bashed in the side of the wall, so you're unconscious again, but not dead. Not dead, fortunately. So as the scenario, as we pull back, our heroes are... Oh, I'm so excited. Just let me say it. Don't interrupt yet for a minute, just to give everybody the final picture for the moment for today. So as we pull back, the crisis is temporarily averted. Esmeralda has the scepter, and she's climbing away. She's climbing away on the side of this crumbling tower. The ladder and the Lizard Man go tumbling down. Mirrorman Cloudhair is standing. The wind is blowing in his hair, and he's holding his collapsible 10-foot pole. And at the end of it is Maximilian Overdrive, who is balancing on the edge of a windowsill. Now he's resting his weight on a windowsill and had been using the pole as a kind of a vault. So those two are connected with a pole. And then meanwhile, another two are connected. The Lizard Man and Florsheim the Bogglebeard are connected. The Lizard Man is bargaining for his life, and he's saying in the swamp speech that I think one of you guys speak, Foghorn Pete, yeah, you speak the swamp speech. He's saying to you, Foghorn, he looks at you, and he says it's in his swamp speech that he says, I'll cut this rope, kill your friend, unless you deliver the scepter to us and summon the beast.
Oh, no. Well, you know, I don't really like dwarves any more than I like lizardmen, so... But, well,
You can't let me die over summoning some evil creature. There's no question. Help him out. You like lizardmen just as much as you like dwarves, so help the guy out. Well, you're unconscious. I dangled at the end of this rope, 20 feet above the ground. You can't really influence him. His memory of me is speaking to him in a loud, clear voice. Is telling him, look, remember Florsheim de Bogglebeard, the dwarven crusaders, come here to find his brother. You're not going to let him splat on the ground just like that after you strove so hard to save him. Do what the man says. Bring the woman with the scepter over to here. She likes the lizard people anyway. And let her do this evil deed. It will have the result of saving my life. My one life is more important than the lives of perhaps many others who could possibly be destroyed by this evil being that will be summoned. At least let him think you're going to do that, and maybe at the last minute switch it up. You know, you're a thief. Maybe you could replace the scepter with a simulacra that you made quickly on the side using your available equipment that happened to be written down on your sheet that seemed something like a scepter, like something that's made of metal, and maybe another thing that's about that size, a piece of a pole, and, you know, add to that like a gem or two that you found somewhere, and give that to him with a little bit of an illusion spell a mirror man could cast. I mean, come on, I don't want to play all your characters for you, but, you know, guys, you can help me out and save yourselves and save this small world, this tiny world where we call ourselves the adventuring party.
You're listening to Fun with Fritz. I'm jumping back in to this adventure, and it's gotten suddenly dark outside. It happens so quickly. This is how you know the difference in the seasons. In the fall, the darkness falls like a rock from the top of a roof. And in the summer, it's just like this gentle hummer, the descent into night. You know, it's a long, slow, pink trip. When we left our heroes, they were on top of this ruin of a castle that had been built on the side of a mountain or cliff, depending on if you're standing on the ground or if you're up on the mountain looking down. It's a cliff, I guess. And it was this ancient structure, and there were a few heroes, a few of our protagonists on this trip. And one of them is a dwarf who's looking for a way for his people to accept him again. He had a brother who got lost in this ruin, and he's trying to find some clues as to what happened to him. The castle itself was made by this amazing woman who was able to subjugate nearby fishing villages and hunting nomadic groups and convince them to build this castle for her. She being the only one who had any knowledge of actually how to pull it off. And actually, it was a sort of matriarchal society where they had gotten all these men who they had kind of subjugated or enslaved in one form or another to help, and had them working for them to do the manual, some of the manual labor involved in raising this castle. So, so that's a bit of the history of where they are. But now they're in the ruin of this castle. So that was like, you know, hundreds of years ago. Now these dwarves live for hundreds of years. So this guy, Florsheim de Balgobjord, while I was looking for my brother who was in this... Is it okay? Can I go? Yeah, sure, go ahead. He was in the Tower of the Knees, and they call it the Tower of the Knees because of the buckled appearance of the tower, which is actually an illusion having to do with the watchtower and the way that they'd set it up, so that if you're looking from far away, it looks like there's a giant person kneeling there on the side of the mountain, watching you with his large central eye, like a single large, tall eye. And inside of that eye, there would be a fire burning, a single fire, as a warning and a beacon of hope for the innocent and a warning to the guilty, of course, but actually just a warning to everyone and a beacon to anyone who was passing by on the road. But that tower I see has fallen, and then I'm now dangling from a rope. I'm unconscious, and my unconscious thoughts are swimming back through history, and I'm desperately trying to come to some understanding, a grapple with reality. And meanwhile, up above, so dangling at the end of this rope is this dwarf who is here for these historical reasons. And up at the top is, I think there's a lizard man holding on to him. And the little halfling named Foghorn Pete, World Swimmer, yes, that's me. I'm trying to decide if I should shoot the dwarf or... I shoot the lizard man, but then he'll drop the dwarf, and then the dwarf might be dead. Or make a deal with the lizard man. He would like me to return a scepter to him and use the scepter to summon some foul, evil being who may result in the destruction of this countryside and maybe many more deaths than just one dwarf. And I've never liked dwarves all that terribly much, but I haven't liked lizardmen oh so much either. So I'm kind of thinking, rather than just being directly responsible for one person's immediate death, I'd rather be indirectly responsible for the deaths of countless others that I won't know or really be feel that accountable for. So I think I'm going to go ahead and make the deal. I say, ah, and I can speak in the swamp speech of the lizard man, and I'll say, ah, lizard man, ah. You can hear the inflections of the swamp speech and how they invade my throat. Swamp speech is best spoken with a mouthful of water. You know, it's a speech designed to be spoken partially submerged, because of course the people of the swamp, well, they are always hiding, and just the eyeballs are above the surface. And so I'll say to him, Bob, Mr. Little Man, I appreciate your desire. You always like us really to help you summon one of these evil creatures to rule this land. I'll accept the offer now of pull my friend up and give him some of that healing mud that I see you have in your pouch by your side to help him revive and feel better. And so... Okay, so you try to persuade him, and he is amenable. He will follow the deal, at least seems to follow the deal. He braces himself